The moment a person rises higher, the vibrational gap between that dimension and Earth becomes larger and communication, particularly via a clairvoyant, more difficult. From the deceased person's point of view, their motivation for contacting those left behind on Earth decreases steadily for two reasons. The first one is that Earth life, in the face of expanding consciousness, is viewed more like a distant dream than reality, and the second is that the individual is operating on a higher dimension and consequently has more power at his or her disposal to affect the welfare of their loved ones left behind on Earth. They are more in tune with the soul or core energy of the person on Earth and can exert greater powers more wisely to help them on a much higher and more intelligent level. Next headline, the lower dimensions, worlds of suffering, the lowest dimensions. There are fundamental differences between appearances on the physical dimension and the non-physical. For a start, on the physical dimension, a beautiful person, meaning a person of high ethical qualities and sound character, can inhabit a body of any shape or size from extremely beautiful to very unattractive. They can be suffering from debilitating illnesses, be disadvantaged in terms of growth, looks or appearance, and yet their personality can shine and be an inspiration to other people. Conversely, an individual's physical appearance may be that of a supermodel, and yet their character and personality may leave a lot to be desired. This is not the case on the non-physical dimensions. Here, a person of sound character will assemble around themselves a matching body. The more highly developed their ethical qualities, the more attractive their bodies. To anyone who has been disadvantaged in their physical life, the next one may reveal their true stunning attractiveness in keeping with their inner personality. The same holds true with their environment and dwellings. A billionaire on Earth may find his circumstances reversed, depending on his or her inner qualities, and a person having lived life in poor conditions may wake up in splendor. The reason for this becomes clear instantly when looking at the nature of the universal energies of creation. The higher the dimension, the more expanded the consciousness, which becomes increasingly harmonized and aware of its unifying origin. As a consequence, the flow of creative energy is greatly enhanced the more a person is aligned with the cosmic laws of unity and harmony. So consciousness becomes more powerful, and with the creative energies flowing more freely through them, they create a more symmetrical and harmonious appearance. One only has to look at the physical world to see that if a plant is not nourished properly, it will wither. In the absence of any redeeming qualities, the inhabitant's appearance can be dramatically affected, producing a golem-like 10 character, someone whose appearance is stunted, deformed, ugly and hideous, even down to Tom and shabby ragged clothes. Their dwelling places may be no better than huts, or simply holes in the ground. They don't have the power of flight, because flying on the next dimension requires discipline or elevated levels of emotions. They scuttle, bent over as if carrying a tremendous burden. All of which is simply the expression of the contents of their minds and an absence of humane qualities. Fortunately, people functioning on such low mentality as to warrant existence on the very lowest level are in the minority. The majority of decent human citizens may never get close to that. Next headline, a matter of harmony and discord. I have had a number of experiences in a dimension or realm that was more drab and appeared to be in a sense more physical than anything I had experienced so far on Earth. These places were twilight zones, inhospitable, like damp fog in November days. The closest description of the atmosphere is of sadness and depression, although I personally was never sad or depressed while visiting them. Leaving my body behind always gave me a powerful positive thrill, but I could not figure out what it was that attracted me to these drab places. It could have been that it was a dimension situated close to our physical world and therefore difficult to avoid. Many years later, I saw a film called The Others, and I was fascinated by how closely the film resembled my experiences. The heaviness, the darkness and the mist were uncanny. It is rather saddening to realize that these drab worlds are actually inhabited by people. They are not necessarily bad people, but people who somehow got lost, perhaps as a result of their state of mind. I realized that it was by no means a foregone conclusion that I would be granted residence in one of the more pleasant places of beauty and splendor, to be welcomed by friends and relatives who had passed on before me, simply because I met my uncle 3 years after his death. It was a dull and sad place, worse than the dingy and damp flat they were assigned to as refugees just after the war. He showed me his stiff leg which hadn't healed. He told me that life was unjust and that there was no reward led a fairly good life. To my astonishment and distress I discovered that my mother, who was a very warm-hearted, much-liked person, spent many years, after her death in a rather drab place. Her only crime was that she had suffered long years of depression and the last few years of her life were spent in a very unhappy relationship. Her state of mind confined her to continuing unhappiness. On the times I managed to visit her after she died, I was perplexed to see how little she had managed to deal with her unhappiness, and I was dismayed by the fact that there seemed to be little justice and comfort for her in her surroundings. I could do little more than hug and reassure her whenever we met. It was as if she was shrouded in a thick blanket of mist, and although I saw that my grandmother was with her on one occasion, nobody managed to banish the veil surrounding her. Finally, and to my great relief, she appeared as her old youthful self, dressed in a splendid gown, welcoming me. It was about 6 years after her physical death, and I will report on the meeting in a later chapter. I have had plenty of practice helping other people when out of body, and I know for sure that there are many discarnate social workers having their work cut out for them, giving a helping hand to people who simply haven't managed to deal with their mental turmoil. No matter whether you have been a morally good person, just as in real life, the afterlife won't change anything unless you work through your problems. In the end, the same laws apply as on the physical plane. Conflict, turmoil and suffering are an opportunity for growth. This is an example of how a mental state can confine you to a very dark and hellish place through no fault of your own, other than being incapable of dealing with your distress. It is the example of my uncle, who was badly wounded during the Second World War and was left severely disabled. I can't remember a time when he wasn't in pain. His attitude towards life over the years became bitter. His only form of humor was one of sarcasm and cynicism. He focused continuously on the negatives in life, finding fault with everything. As a result, his wife, my aunt, who I always remembered as a very kind and generous person, became very negative and pessimistic also. For sacrifice and that he had been kicked in the teeth for giving his life for his country. I tried to persuade him that a change of attitude may affect an external change and encouraged him to find it in himself to look at some good things, like his two beautiful daughters, one whom had a very happy marriage to a successful businessman, the other who had helped many people as a social worker. I told him that in this world his injury was in his mind and that he didn't have to stay in this drab place, but could move on to a sunnier place, which he deserved. But he would have none of it. "This is what everybody keeps telling me," he said. "But I tell you what, the only person I can rely on is the devil." With that he made the sign of devil's horns and scuttled off stiffly into the mist. Life can be cruel, but just because we die it doesn't mean we are assured a place on a heavenly dimension. Work will continue. The suicide will find to their distress that nothing has changed and that their present afterlife conditions are made worse by the heartache they have caused to those left behind. Simply being a good person and leading a good life doesn't promote us to a place in heaven automatically. And there is no reason why reality should differ from our physical reality just because it's on a different dimension. In the end it comes down to truth and the laws of nature. There is no mollycoddling in the next world. If anything, we are much more exposed to the truth and there are fewer hiding places from it than on the physical earth, where we are offered freedom to pretend, deceive and escape. Poverty is a state of mind. Some of the regions I visited were the closest thing to hell I can imagine. People suffering from mental illness and depression were found in a bleak and lonely environment, But at least they had many sympathetic people standing by who were only too eager to help them to get out of their state of affairs and to escort them to a much brighter region. This cannot be said of people who were out to take advantage of their fellow human being, to the extent of causing misery and destruction, LL fraudsters, rapists, murderers, psychopaths and a whole range of characters who had chosen to cause suffering to other people. Nothing, of course, is ever black and white, but generally speaking these people tend to meet their match in the next life simply because of their laws of attraction. These realms, created by minds incapable of altruism, are probably the inspiration to many a horror movie. There are regions where there isn't even evil, just poverty of mind. I can remember one such place. Next headline, Desolate Places. 19th of September 1977. My awakening into lucidity happened gradually until finally I popped into full waking consciousness. When I looked around I was in a deserted square in Chisa, large city. By its vibrations I identified it as the lower dimensional counterpart of the city of Hamburg. But this was a neglected place, unlike its prosperous physical counterpart. Wind blew rubbish through the street. I walked towards a wall and studied the detail of a half-torn-off poster. I could feel the rough texture of the ripped edges and even see the raster dots of the print. I was amazed by the amount of random and intricate detail and wondered how it had come into existence. I decided that it was such an accurate copy that I was on a lower level right next to the physical plane. With fascination I observed the rubbish being blown through the street by a cold wind and for a moment I considered whether this rubbish was nothing more than the negative content of people's minds still walking the earth. I also pondered whether people who arrived in this place after their death would realize that they were dead, because it was such an authentic replica of physical life with nothing supernatural or unnatural about it. But this certainly was not the physical earth. It looked nothing like the Hamburg I knew, it just had the feeling of that city. As I wandered the deserted streets I thought about death and how difficult it must be for dead people in the face of such blatant reality to accept the fact that they had died, and how they may have wondered what had happened to them, what mysterious forces had transported them to this bleak and forsaken place. I saw a few lost souls wandering about aimlessly, puzzling over how they got here or how to get home. It was extremely dull. Dusky grey and with a stark and ominous presence or atmosphere, somehow too real to be Earth. But although, next headline, the old man in the hut. Date not remembered. I don't remember how I got to the place, but it was cold and dark. I was disappointed that on this relatively rare occasion of journeying into another dimension I had found myself yet again in a dismal, wretched place. Was I being punished by some higher power for some crime I had committed in the past? Whatever it might have been that brought me to this place, it wasn't as a result of how I felt. Trusting in the possibility that there was something to be gained from this, I wandered through the desert. I was not alone, I felt a presence close by. It was reassuring, benevolent, but I could not see this was unpleasant. It was by no means the worst place I had come across. Although I had a vague curiosity to find out what attracted people to this place, how they got here and why I was demotivated to follow my curiosity when I looked at the dreary figures moping around, who were not even aware that I existed. I decided to rise into the air to explore further. I glided 10 feet above the ground, but when I came across a building site I came crashing down. I felt a sharp pain in my head and right arm, which I observed with curiosity. Until now I had assumed that pain was a uniquely physical experience. This was the first time I had felt physical pain while out of my body. And it was super real, super pain. I was shocked to realize that far from being released from physical pain after death, people who found themselves here were exposed to the prospect of experiencing pain far greater than on Earth. I thought that the level of pain and suffering could be exponentially greater in regions denser, lower and more negative than this. My own pain was a blunt illustration of this, and it was only when I reminded myself that I had the power to control my thoughts and feelings that the pain subsided. I knew then that for some people death may not be an escape from their physical's discomforts at all, but an intensification of it, depending on their state of mind. It dawned on me with horror that on levels much lower than this there could be hells of unimaginable suffering. Acceptable, almost as if, anyone. Whatever it was, it did not protect me from a very unpleasant chill making me shiver. Again I was reminded that pain was not a force belonging solely to Earth. In fact, this cold was more fierce than any I could remember. It was not just extremely bitter, but positively cruel. It had an emotional aspect that physical cold does not have, which made it much less bearable than its Earth equivalent. This was pain literally of another dimension. With it came an absolute absence of help or redemption, from what I did not know. Then, suddenly, the cold became more somebody had thrown a warm blanket around me. I was here to learn, to observe, not to suffer. I knew I didn't belong here. Others were not so lucky. This was home for those shadows darting through the desert, a home in tune with their natures. Having strayed into this godforsaken region, which seemed to be stretching into infinity, I wondered where these exiled souls could turn to find their way out. There were no lights for as far as the eye could see, no beacons of hope, only vast, dark, cold desert. My advantage was that I knew I could return to physical consciousness simply by waking up. The souls condemned to live here had no such option. I noticed a shack in the distance. Compared to the dirty holes I had seen, this seemed like luxury. When I strayed inside the shack, which was thrown together from rough pieces of wood and junk, with large gaps in between, I saw a very old, thin man squatting in front of a stove which had no fire. He seemed oblivious of my presence. His poverty of mind and appearance was reflected in the junk he had accumulated around himself, collected pieces of rubbish he may have picked up in the desert in a sad attempt to create some semblance of home comfort. I felt repelled, sensing he was a cruel and selfish man. The coldness of this realm was a natural extension of his own character and the pain he felt. He was a bitter man, maybe disappointed by his fellows. Here he could be by himself. I could not tell whether he knew that he was dead or simply that he blamed an unjust fate for his condition. I felt a vague obligation to help, but a stronger urge to get away from him. Then a sudden sadness found itself in me, a great sense of pity for such abandonment. He too had once been a child, then he had failed life's challenges. He had made some wrong choices. I stared at 100 almost as soon as I, guardian to a place which him, but I didn't have the energy to intervene and was relieved when I found myself awake in my bed. I left my body. I was escorted by a silence. I was dark and impregnated with fear. But I was reassured by a benevolent, empowering energy. I was led into a sparse room where a man had been tied to a chair and was being tortured. He was a victim of a brutal regimen. The henchmen serving the punishment received a cruel satisfaction from their evil deed, but their victim was my focus. To my relief, my guide indicated that his ordeal was nearly over and that I was there to ease his distress and prepare him to move as gently as possible into the next level. On many occasions I was aware of a kind of companion. Somebody who seemed to have taken me under his wing, a silent presence that escorted me to certain places, like this one, just to observe. No words were exchanged, but I knew the purpose of my visit each time. But on other occasions I was enlisted to help, such as in the following event. Dimension. He said there was a real danger that his state of mind could be so severely unbalanced by the ordeal that it could catapult him into a very dark place, which he didn't deserve. Every time pain was applied to his body, I knew that he could see us. My invisible partner had generated a soothing light around T-Man. When he passed out from the pain, the light was there to comfort him. I tried to hold his attention and said with all the positive warmth, tilde I could muster, it will soon be over, just be patient. I felt great pity for him and compensated for his pain with warmth and reassuring him with thoughts of the beautiful world I told him he would enter. I knew I was getting through to him, and my Gui confirmed it by increasing the radiance around him. The man's face relaxed and he smiled. Then he returned to his body for the last time. He didn't even feel the pain of the blow which killed him. My guide took over and carried him away. I returned to my body. Next headline, Escape from Hell, 7th of January 2005. I have already touched on my mother's fate after her death. I lived in England while she was still alive and only ever saw her once a year. After she suffered a stroke, she used a wheelchair and was looked after by her elderly second husband. When he died, the house was sold, and it was then that I found out from an old neighbor the cruel extent of her unhappiness and suffering. She never once complained to me or either of my brothers, because it is tough to come to terms with the cruelty and inhumanity of some people who are in stark contrast to the millions of helpers who compensate and ease the burden of these monstrous crimes. One thing is certain, evil is incompatible with a life on the higher dimensions, which are saturated with love, goodwill and creativity. It is as inevitable that such cruelty will seek a corresponding environment after death, as it is inevitable that the countless helpers whose lives are driven by compassion and a consuming instinct to help, are rooted in a dimension which is permeated with light, symmetry and beauty, and yet these opposing forces can live side by side within an individual. There in a battle will decide which part will gain the upper hand. Recently, I saw a video recording of a suicide bomber who talked in loving terms to his young daughter sitting on his lap about the mission for which he had to sacrifice himself and many innocent people. I felt that his great crime was one of supreme arrogance and self-delusion, which had condemned so many innocent lives to premature death, but had also betrayed his young daughter. Looking at the picture on the TV, I could see the vast, hellish landscape of his afterlife unravel before me. His realization that all he had accomplished was to create suffering, the abandonment of his child, her hatred and perhaps, when she grew up, her pity, as well as tire lifelong anguish of the relatives of his victims, will take more than one afterlife to make amends. The simple truth of this universe is that there are two major forces at work, one of empowerment, unity, love and creativity, attracting energies from the highest dimensions, and one of destruction, segregation, hatred and bigotry, attracting the energies of the lowest. She was always one to put on a brave face. It was only when her depression became obvious that we sought help for her. But she suffered another stroke and died shortly afterwards. After her death, I met her a number of times when out of my body. I was distressed to see that she was cut off from everyone, surrounded by a dark cloud I simply could not penetrate. I saw my grandmother next to her telling me that she was keeping an eye on her, but that she could not reach her. The thought of her unhappiness was never far from my mind. I started meditation at 7 a.m. I varied my techniques occasionally. In my mind, I conjured up one of my favorite scenes, where I boarded a boat and was taken to a small island with a temple. Then I visualized myself sitting in the temple on a chair showered with light, meditating. I decided to contemplate the nature of higher consciousness. To do so, I abandoned my visualization in favor of entering a being state, a condition the Indian philosopher Krishnamurti called choiceless awareness, the true state of being, an awareness of the here and now, without any attributes. It is an effective way of leaving behind any attachments to the ego or the personal life. After an hour and a half, seductive dream images started drifting past me, and it was challenging not to be tempted into following them. In order to avoid this, I opened my eyes and looked at my watch. It was 8:45 a.m. I re-entered my meditation and returned my attention slowly to an acute and highly focused waking awareness. After a short while, my wife, Julia, entered the room and told me that it was nearly 9 o'clock, and she wondered whether I could take the Christmas tree out so that the rubbish collectors could take it away. I told her that I needed to meditate just a few minutes longer to ease myself out of the deep state I was in. At the same time, I thought to myself that it was a very odd request, since I had chucked out the Christmas tree days earlier. There was an inconsistency to reality. I decided that the best way to deal with it was to deepen my meditation while retaining full waking awareness. Strangely enough, when I opened my eyes again in order to end my meditation, I found myself in another room altogether. When I looked around, I found my younger daughter sleeping on the floor, and next to her, sitting up awake, her older sister. They looked much younger than I knew them to be, just children, in fact. Although I was already awake, this inconsistency catapulted me into full waking eye consciousness. Then, looking at them more closely, I discovered that they were not my children at all. At that moment a young lady entered the room. She was about 30, with a gentle manner, very attractive with long blonde hair. I apologized profusely to her for having entered the wrong room. She reassured me with a nice smile that there was nothing to apologize for, and I left the room. Outside in the hall I noticed that the house was huge, with a large open staircase. Lots of cheerful children were running about, playing freely and chasing each other. There were toys everywhere. Some friendly adults were reading to the children, others were playing with them. As I walked down the staircase, my head felt very heavy. It was the thick, trance-like drowsiness I sometimes experienced during meditation, and I was keen to clear my head. Momentarily, I became unsure whether this might be real waking life, and I tried to recall what I had done before and how I might have arrived at this place. The only way to prove to myself that this was not the physical level was to lift, off the ground into the air, in what I referred to as the flying test. Sure enough, I left the ground effortlessly and hovered several feet above the ground. This realization gave me instant control over my mind, and the heaviness in my head just rolled away like fog over a field. The clarity was immense. All my senses awakened instantly. I left the nursery by walking down the large flight of stairs, out of the front door and into the square of a large town. Walking down the road, I discovered, to my surprise, discarded industrial junk. I identified it as thought junk, abandoned, pointless thoughts, littering the environment. I was irritated to be confronted with such pollution. This put a dampener on my newfound freedom. I walked straight through wide open doors into an ugly industrial building. Instinctively, I knew that the environment was related closely to the way I felt. The only way I could improve my environment was by returning to my meditation. Past experience told me that chanting the mantra was the most potent way to affect change in this dimension. So I started chanting. Next headline, I felt like a child. The first chant swept me instantly off my feet and sucked me up into the air with a powerful force. The second chant came booming from the center of my chest and gave me an ecstatic thrill. The third chant was picked up by an invisible choir of disembodied angelic voices of implausible sweetness that made me soar right to the ceiling of the building, which opened out, and I sailed straight through into a brilliant blue sky. But it was not sky. It was an infinite, cathedral-like dome in a million blue hues. For a moment I considered chanting again to see where it would take me, when I remembered suddenly the reason for my being here: the welfare of my mother. Years had passed since her death, and, on the rare occasions when I saw her, she was a prisoner, cocooned in a cloud of sadness. I called out her name, loudly, heartfelt with joy. Instantly, and with astonishing force, I was pulled through the air over a paradisiacal countryside. I slowed down over an artistically landscaped park with ornamental water features. I chose a modest and simple yet beautiful stone bench as my landing space. And, as I glided down, there she was, in a long green gown with gold embroidery. She was young, in her 30s, angelic looking, with a warm, almost voluptuous figure. Her gentle smile cracked finally into a burst of joy. I felt a wave of incredible love surging towards me as I landed right next to her and told her in German, "Just give me a good hug." The joy of seeing her so happy for the first time after so many years moved me to tears. She too had tears of joy in her eyes. I told her that the most incredible thing of our meeting was that this was not a dream and that I was in a complete and super awake state of consciousness. She nodded and smiled. I told her that I had been very concerned for her welfare all these years and that it was just the happiest moment to see her in such splendid surroundings. She told me she knew how I had felt. We had another long hug, mother and son. Again, totally surrendering to her love.